afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. If you're looking for anything in the way of a tractor or mowing equipment, go see them. They're up at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They got lots of stuff in stock. They're also a Honda dealer. They have lots of generators on hand if the power goes out. We're having some pretty nice weather here lately, so if the power does go out, go up and see them. They've got lots to choose from up there. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And if you don't want to remember all that, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and it's right there.
There it is. Click on their site and on their ad, and you'll go right to them.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm not going to dilly-dally here. We have Dr. Chen and his friend Eureka Young on with us. We're talking about Hong Kong and, I guess more broadly, the issues of what happens when the government rolls in and decides what you can say, what you can think, where you can go. And the Chinese Communist Party is something we'll refer to a lot in this program. And they'll always say CCP, and sometimes people are like, what the heck's a CCP? Chinese Communist Party is the reference there. So, guys, where would you like to go this hour?
So, I would like to first summarize the Hong Kong situation, and then introduce a very relevant, surprising incident that happened last week that will help us to look beyond or from Hong Kong incident and beyond what it is and see the world stage. So the many people worried Hong Kong will develop into a June 4th massacre. It already is. But the reason that we don't feel it is exactly because what Eureka has called it a controlled raid massacre. If we look at this siege of two universities in Hong Kong, the Chinese University in Hong Kong, the Pop University in Hong Kong, and the Polytechnic University, the two universities in Hong Kong. Not even in 1989 June 4th massacre in mainland China that the Chinese army has attacked or sieged any university in mainland China. So in comparison, the CCP has gotten much bolder than in Beijing 30 years ago. What prevented the outright massacre is Hong Kong's economic position. Now, in terms of number of arrests and people killed, it's already close to in 1989. Right? Available information says 6,000 Hong Kong resident has been arrested, and the British consulate staff who was arrested in China, as Eureka has mentioned in top of the first half program, he witnessed a large number of Hong Kong protesters being detained in Hong Kong, in Shenzhen. This proves, as I said, you know, that the CCP didn't need an extradition law. They're doing it already. With or without this law, 6,000 has been sent to mainland China where there's no law. I mean, we have no idea how much they have suffered. many of these people who have been reported being suicide, you know, what we Chinese call being suicide, probably are victims of the torture and killing, right? But the CCP is doing it in such a way that it controls the severity of it. So to the people that the threat is real, but to Western media, to the outside world, it's not as bad as June 4th massacre. And this is the danger of the controlled rape massacre. Kill as they need it. And this is very similar to another approach of the CCP, the organ harvest against Falun Gong practitioners. You know, Falun Gong practitioners were detained. They were killed as the organ is needed. But let me introduce another topic. This is closely related to this Hong Kong confrontation. Is the last week there is a Chinese agency called Wang Liqiang or William Wang, who defected to Australia government in April, but only came out publicly to disclose the things he was involved in conducting the CCP's business in Hong Kong as well as in Taiwan in Australia. The information he disclosed proved to a large extent of what we have talked about, the larger plan, the larger plot by the CCP. So Eureka has more information on this William Wang and how its impact and some of the interesting story. So Eureka, you want to speak about it?
About William Wang Liqiang. This is a pseudonym used in intelligence circle, as like a lot of Chinese agents, they have their pseudonyms. One well-known example is the son of Marshal Ye Jianying. Marshal Ye was involved in negotiation of during the Marshall mission. Like it was prior to 1949, communist takeover of mainland. He was involved in negotiating with the U.S. delegates, the delegation, as well as the nationalists. And his son was in military intelligence. And his son's real name was Ye Xuanming, but he used a pseudonym, Ye Feng. And they use many pseudonyms in different occasions. Then they have a kind of a well-known one, like established pseudonym. So this Wang Liqiang is claimed that he is using this name as a pseudonym as well. And interestingly enough, that he reported to someone who is based in Hong Kong. And another you may say it is coincidental, is a well-known CFO of a Huawei telecommunications company. And their CFO was based in Hong Kong as well, who was arrested when transiting in Canada to Argentina like about a year ago. I believe it was exactly, today is the anniversary of Meng Wanzhou, Sabrina Meng, to arrest last year when she was like traveling from China to Argentina. And she is based in Hong Kong. A lot of agencies were well connected with Chinese with military background. They set up the front shops in Hong Kong. So this Wang Liqiang came up with a story on how he was associated with his boss, whose name is Xiang Xin. It could very well be another pseudonym. And he was teaching his boss's wife how to paint painting, like oil painting, as far as I remember. Then he was very close to the couple. And so this time he came out in met media in Australia, and the couple who Mr. Wang claimed were his boss and the boss's wife, they were visiting Taiwan, and the couple were engaged in infiltrating Taiwan and influencing Taiwan's upcoming election.
And the couple denied that
they even know Mr. Wang. But then a picture came out. Taiwan authorities presented a picture with the three of them, like in the same setting. So this is more or less the background of this
artifact. Wow. Hold that thought. We're going to come right back. We've got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. You can find all the information about today's show and our guests at wethepeopleradio.us.
But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. All I want is someone.
I sing this song to Bill all the time.
It doesn't do any good.
But I can't read his mind, just for the record. Okay, let's go back to Australia and the quote-unquote spy. Or not.
Erica, you're there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Basically, that was the how this Mr. Wang came to the public to tell his story, and it also gave us a glimpse of how the impact of the National Intelligence Act of 2017 that was like put into effect by the National Congress in Beijing. And according to Article 7 of that National Intelligence Act, all the Chinese nationals, like whether they're within China or they're overseas, they are supposed to support intelligence gathering. And this has made it's really kind of now the government in Beijing is operating in this new territory of all its nationals are like obligated to provide intelligence. And the Chinese officials, of course, they deny that they have to do these. They deny that. But the denial was never like outright saying like Chinese citizens are under no obligation. Like it was never clear cut. And there are ways that like they were influenced. It's also even in Australia, reports came out like in recent years that Chinese students studying in Australia, they are organized through this student association. And the leaders of these student associations, Chinese student associations, they report to consulate, embassy and the consulate officials. So it is through this hierarchy of management Chinese students are organized. And if they, this also comes back to like our freedom of speech, right? If a student makes makes a comment on Hong Kong unfavorably toward Beijing or the special administration regions like a government in their handling, in the overuse of a police force or that, then this whole, through this hierarchy, the student's words and his comments will be documented and it will be on file. So this surveillance has come out, actually, has expanded, not just for people within China, even for people, Chinese people, like overseas, now they have this kind of threat. And Australia is one place, and the United States, we have these similar student associations. We have Confucius Institutes, right? Confucius Institute. And in Canada, there was this organized parade that people like driving like sports cars, fancy cars, and with Chinese flags and all that, and try to harass like Hong Kong students and all that. So it is through this hierarchy, strictly like managed hierarchy, and with many of these people running the network actually serving the Chinese intelligence community. So that's how its overseas operations are being carried out. So I think, Sudo, maybe you can take over from here. I would just give you some background information.
Yeah, so among other things William Wang has done was to influence the 2018 election. It was a very large election, national election below the federal level. All the county, cities, and the CCP won, or the side that support or affiliate with the CCP won a big way. And he disclosed how that was manipulated from the CCP side. He also substantiated the CCP's underground manipulation in Hong Kong, including arresting people, book publishers. He was personally involved in one of them. And then also he disclosed the agent network in Australia. So many people, you know, many common commentators was very surprised by the amount of information that's disclosed, which is surprising, but even more surprising to me, right, is how this is a very young person. He's 27 years old. And many people claim that he's a small-time operator, being so young. From his education, he was not a traditional or typical, he didn't really have the professional spy training. There's one thing I need to add, that as soon as he spoke to the public, the CCP side came out with several court documents showing that he was a criminal in China, basically trying to discredit him. Well, unfortunately, his name, Wang Lichang, is a pseudonym. That's not his real name. So this caused
into question how the Chinese court document was...
yeah, how'd they get a court document with the guy's fake name on it? Oops.
But anyway, so what I think what caught my eye is something not about how small time he is. It particularly if it's a small time operator, then we need to look at why he has this large impact. And then more than that, how many of these small time operators are there?
Yeah.
So this brings out a very serious topic. That is how the CCP has weaponized the whole Chinese population to be its soldier, pawn, or agent in carrying out its agenda against the whole world. In previous program, we talked about the Thousand Talent Program and how the Chinese used Chinese business to infiltrate this country, right? And so there's this theme that now with Wang Yicheng's defection, hopefully the world will start to see. And I just want to quickly summarize a very, very rough summary of how the Chinese or Communist Party has weaponized the Chinese people. Erica already mentioned some of it, a little bit of it. Violence and coercion to subdue people's conscience so they would act against their conscience is one way. And then I often characterize the CCP's ruling as rule by deception. Its propaganda and mobilization machine is one that the world has yet to recognize. And that machine has come to this country. It has bought a lot of media here.
I was going to say, how much of it do you... I would be really interested to know. We've take a quick break again. When we come back, I'd like to know what, as you guys are watching what's happening in the United States, how reminiscent is it of what's happening in China? And I would imagine it's fairly scary, because the more we learn from you, the more we look at our own media differently. We'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Chen and also Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Surveillance songs from the olden days. I guess we were being warmed up for the whole idea. So how much of what's going on in the U.S. is like the baby steps toward what we're seeing in Hong Kong and also in China?
Much more than you are willing to, you want to know.
I'm going to say that.
The media purchase and control, covert operation, unfortunately, those information are not completely known. I hope the United States is paying attention to that. Well, I know they're paying attention now, but when they start to pay attention to, I don't know. And when will those information be known to us? I don't know. But only from scattered information, we can already know that it's very, very severe. The stealing, the controlling, the propaganda, okay? So let me put it this way, okay? The CCP has already weaponized the Chinese nationals, or the original from China, maybe they're real citizens now. They weaponized its subject or its population in the large ways against other countries' interests for a long time. For its scale, for its pervasiveness, the systematic way they're doing things, such things, should be viewed, it really is, right, should be viewed as an undeclared war against the world. The CCP's undeclared war against world. And the CCP has a term for this kind of war. The Chinese is called the Chao Xian Zhan. Well, if I translated that into English, it would be the war without bottom line, with no bottom line. Basically, anything goes, right? So this war, the CCP has been conducting for the past 30 years, well, minimum 20 years. And we are far from realizing it. This war is actually conducted by the Chinese military. I will ask Yurika to fill in how this command was structured. This war command is structured. The so-called National Security Commission. Right. Yurika, you want to fill in the some of the details?
Yeah. The Chao Xian Zhan in Chinese, meaning exceeding war, exceeding any limits. And a prominent China expert, Michael Pillsbury, who works in the as advisor to Secretary of Defense, he started his long career in the intelligence community. He described this as asymmetric war. Due to the predominant military power of the United States, and back in as early as 1990s, Chinese military figured that to fight the United States, it would be hard if, send out warships, send out airplanes. And I believe Chinese military had a hard time building jet engines themselves. So they decide they need to find out an alternative to confront the United States. So they came up with this idea of asymmetric war. And this got strengthened, this approach, in recent years. And Mike Pillsbury has been engaged with Chinese military commanders over the past few decades. And recently, he had been more outspoken. He published a well-known book, The 100-Year Marathon, that described the ultimate goal of the Chinese military. And it's his side of the story. And he was one of the early spread like alarmists who understood the danger of this asymmetrical warfare. And in the recent years, for example, in the past 5 or so years, there was this National Security Committee formed in China, which oversees a lot of sectors. Those are it oversees military under the name of national security. It oversees state security. It oversees financial security. It oversees all the possible disturbances that could come up across the country, including northwestern part of the country, Xinjiang autonomous region. So all these explosive issues or touch issues are under the portfolio of this National Security Committee. And it has military arm of it, it has state security arm of it, and stretching up and coming down from this hierarchy, when it extends to its overseas operations, these orders are being carried out diplomats, by leaders of the student associations, and also people like Wang Liqiang, who are sent out by these intelligence agency, and who reports that these intelligence officials ultimately they report to this National Security Commission. So that's the general outline of the hierarchy.
The head of that committee or commission is the CCP Secretary General Xi Jinping. And so that's where it came from. Right? It's from top to bottom. And it's earlier I said this is an undeclared war against the world, particularly for the leader in military technology as well as economic inventions, scientific inventions. But this is also an undeclared war against the Chinese people. As Eureka said, any people have any discontent thought would be dealt with severely by this national security force or machinery. And so this brings up a situation where a large number of Chinese citizens or nationals are both the victim as well as pawn or agent of the Chinese Communist Party. They're victims because their rights, their life has been, has suffered the oppression by this regime. But meanwhile, large number, I'm talking about millions and millions of Chinese people, wittingly or unwittingly has been acting as Chinese or the CCP agent. And they act like this for one reason or another, out of their fear, out of their, economic interest, or out of their control through this propaganda, this CCP propaganda of nationalistic hatred, and many, many different manipulation, right? And they became this non-soldier army, right? And this is a new threat. This is a threat that the world has to come to realize and think about how to handle it. Because the Chinese people are not necessarily their army. Not necessarily their enemy, but they're on their land. We have millions of Chinese in the United States.
So Pompeo and Secretary Pompeo and Vice President Pence both have said as recently, separate the CCP from China. Right? This is an important improvement from our past administrations, but that's not enough yet.
Just because they're recognizing it, it's important.
Yeah, recognizing this is important. It's very important.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like it's been really talked about or acknowledged in the past. I think this is becoming much more a bit more of a mainstream idea. I mean, heck, we're talking about it. Let's take a really quick break here so we don't run you guys up to the top of the hour with all of our celebrations of capitalism here. So we'll take a little quick break. We'll be back with our guests. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Okay. So, in our last, 10 minutes, I know we'll have you guys on again in the future because obviously, again, we didn't get to everything. But
one last question I had was recently there was an election over in Hong Kong.
Oh yeah.
And we heard a little bit about it, but the concern was, what do you think the CCP's how are they going to react to that election?
Yeah, this is the last topic I want to bring this story into completion also. Last minute I tried to compress everything into this last 10 minutes. That is this election, as well as just before the election, there was this passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act by the House and by the Senate. Well, I won't have time to get into how this act was actually delayed. Most likely by the interests of Wall Street. But anyway, it finally got passed and signed by President Trump. And that's just before the election. Right? I'll come back to the election. I want to say why this itself is very significant. We probably didn't realize this is the first act or bill that relate to human rights or democracy anywhere in China. For the past 30 years, right? China has been the single biggest violator of human rights. And yet, for the past 30 years, the U.S. didn't take any real meaningful act that has teeth. And this is the first one. And I don't have time to go into it, how this was delayed, how this was really coming into being because Hong Kong's economic position or U.S. economic interests in Hong Kong. But basically, the United States actually faced two problems, realizing one but not the other. Right. So thanks to
President Trump, the United States finally stood up against the CCP in the area of economics, started beating them back. But that only stopped the CCP advancement in one area, the economic, exploitation. The bigger half of the problem is the CCP's undeclared war. And they're using, they're weaponizing the Chinese nationals to harm other nations. And there's really no legislative tool or other tools against that, right? Because the number is so large. And so it should be obvious the solution is to support the righteous. When the world make it clear that the world will stand for principle, those Chinese people who were forced into act against their conscience will be encouraged by the world's righteousness. And this is what happened. For the first time in 30 years, the only time and the first time, the United States passed something that's meaningful. And that gave Hong Kong people the courage, a hope, right? And interestingly, for the past month or two, the Hong Kong police has been denying Hong Kong people's application for parade or for demonstration. Yesterday in Hong Kong, we're a day behind, this Sunday in Hong Kong people once again apply for permission of demonstration, and this time in the name of celebrating the United States passage and signing of Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. And the Hong Kong police gave them the permission. And this in itself is very significant. I hope this tells our politician that not only we need to protect our own economic interest, but if we stand up and to support the Chinese people, who will they themselves do the right things, then it will help a lot of people getting away from doing the wrong things against the United States. That solved the other half of the problem. And that's the best way. And the help is out there, what the United States needs, right? Falun Gong, for the past 20 years, has been standing up for conscience. And Falun Gong has been a single group that has been persecuted most severely. And as now, the United States has not spoken up for Falun Gong. And yet that is one group that has spoken very consistently and loudly on the rights, on the righteousness of people. And I hope that we take a lesson, we take what has been shown right away, this act, its impact, it's powerful, how powerful it is, and learn from there what's the right path for this nation to help China and then help itself.
I'm curious when how I don't know how to even ask the question. How on guard are you when you meet new people who have come here to the U.S. from China? Do you kind of assume everybody's a spy?
Well, I am not guarded, but I'm not naive. It's just that I don't really care what I just tell them the right thing. If they listen, then I believe what I gave them is truth, the facts, and help them. And I have no fear. I really have no fear of being harmed by them. I just don't. But I know the CCP, their scheme, and I've been speaking about their scheme all these years. And so, I've met a lot of Chinese people, and I have been speaking like what I have spoken here.
And so you don't have to, really, in the position that you're in now, you don't have to worry that they're kind of creeping up on you and they'll hurt your relatives and that sort of thing?
Well, they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, but then there's that. That's true.
If I fear, then my fear wouldn't help me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
my fear would not help me.
And so, getting back to the election, do you think this new fellow that got voted in is going to get kind of the strong arm laid on him to try to get everything back in line, or do you think they'll let him speak?
It depends on the world, depends on them. I view this as as I described, the CCP has declared, it has this undeclared war of no bottom line against the world. And the only way for the world to counter is to do something with bottom line. So it's a war of bottom line versus no bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in this, the side with bottom line is one entity. And so it's the totality of that, the positive force. I'm sure those people who were elected in, if they don't, they will not stand up for what they elected for. They would not jump into this election in the first place. They took a lot of risk.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I'm sure they'll do
what
they do.
Not like it's a surprise.
But they need help. But they need world help.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to be recognized for what they're trying to do and supported, for sure.
Well, I really...
We recognize as one of ourselves, not them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good point. Good point, because there but for the grace of God goes this country. Thank you for sounding the warning call and for giving us all this great information, you guys. I hope people will go on and listen to the show and send it to your friends and your relatives. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you so much, and I'm sure we will speak with both of you again. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.